The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Astomati, good afternoon. We're on Man in Line, open line today through till 1 o'clock. Call 66 13 68. Text and WhatsApps on 166 177. Email studio at manxradio.com. Some good news. Well, do you remember yesterday we had that phone call in from Peter? Peter in Burnley in Lancashire was having terrible problems with the TT app, the TT Live thing. And, well, thank you to Danny, lady who called yesterday and said, more than happy to help Peter. And she did. She ended up helping Peter. It was something to do with the fact he'd logged in on two devices. And I don't know. Don't ask me how it happened. But apparently the solution was to put his mobile phone in the microwave. Not turning the microwave on, but apparently it isolated it. I've no idea whether that works or is even authentic or whether it's even legal. But he's told me last night he put the microwave in the oven and his laptop was working perfectly. So well done. And thank you, Danny. Invaluable help for that, Danny. A very capable woman. Thanks for that. When I was in business, we were talking yesterday about apprenticeships. And also, this is tied in with the fact that this education report and the cost of it haven't been released yet, and they don't want us to know how much the education report cost. Dee dropped a note in just to say, when I was in business on the Isle of Man, I had problem finding school leavers who could speak, write and spell English properly. The teachers and parents need to look to themselves for poor communication skills in the young. Thank you, Dee, for that note in. The standard of school leavers, well, 0.7% unemployment. I know there have been some comment regarding 0.7% unemployment and what it actually means for the Isle of Man. But it does seem that there are some people coming out of school or education who aren't perfect for the workplace. Well, that's always been the way, hasn't it? There have always been people who come out of education with what could be classed as an incomplete education, but tend to get by. Anyway, have you got any thoughts on that or anything else? And tons of messages we didn't get to yesterday, and also questions about the way the TT is being run now with all the race days and whether or not that's the right thing to do. Commerce on the Isle of Man getting a shout because the races seem to be more race days than there ever were before. For once, I agree with you. And too many road closures, you never know what's happening. You can't arrange your days. Just too many road closures. Well, they're racing today, but it has been delayed. But yes, a lot more than before. And also the message, put the TT back as it used to be, says 692. The fans want it, businesses want it, the marshals want it, the steam packet would like it. Well, we don't know. This is only your opinion, 692. The organisers need to stop saying they try to cause the least disruption, and then they have two more races. 692's opinion there. Steam packet, well, they've not evinced any opinion really as to what the steam pack can just cope with what's happening, don't they? The marshals, well, there's always a shortage of marshals, but I don't know about discontent with it. No, the marshal fraternity. And a message in regarding, oh yes, just put the TT back as it used to be. Another comment in from Bridget, that is. Thank you, Bridget. And Any more thoughts on this? You can. Why is it a surprise that we have a lack of young people on apprenticeships when it's become so easy for them to go across to university, says Dick. Daphne Kane did say a few months ago that the 3% rise in university fees across will cost us an extra £210,000 a year. In the £10 million we pay for our students to study at a university across every year. Even then, these students are expected to pay a third of that back, but unfortunately many of those who choose never to return to the island after graduating actually pay hardly anything back, which means we're paying a minimum of £10 million a year to educate 1,000 students over 3 years across a university, and an estimated 300 of those will never return to pay a penny in income tax to the Isle of Man, the very island's taxpayers who paid for their education. We should stop, this is Dick, said, we should stop giving millions away each year and let our students pay their own £27,000 in fees, and would encourage more to do an apprenticeship or avoid a student loan of at least £30,000 at the end. English students on the same degree course have to pay all of their £9,000 annual fee back, at least £30,000 back as part of their loan. So why are we not getting ours to do the same, or better still, do an apprenticeship? We'd be far better classing our students the same as England and give the whole £10 million to help first-time buyers or people who want to live here, not those who don't, says Dick. Well, it's been a moot point for many years, the fact that we fund, to a large extent, tuition fees for our students going across. Remember, on top of tuition fees, students then have to find accommodation fees and travel to and from the Isle of Man. Perhaps 4 or 5 or 6 return journeys a year if you count half terms and the end of term and what have you. So that would make it very hard for students, wouldn't it? If you have somebody who's looking forward to going to university in September, October, providing that their results come out okay, I just wonder what your thoughts are. Do you think we should start charging for tuition fees? It's very different across. Many students come out with a huge debt that they technically have to pay off. But in reality, unless their earnings go above a certain threshold, they don't pay off. It just goes. It just dies with them. That was Mr. Blair, I think, the Prime Minister over there, who brought the tuition fees in. So it's worth thinking about, and I just wonder what your opinion is. You heard Dick's. Isle of Man Enterprise, Department for Enterprise, is the race promoter for the TT, and the website's owned by the Isle of Man Department of Enterprise Motorsport Team. I suggest anybody with issues with TT Live gives them a call on 686-400, says Andrea. How's your TT Live going? I had the same problem as Eric getting it on my laptop. I went to laptop, login, change password. They emailed me a link to change the password. I did that and now I've got it on. Try that, says Sue. There were some problems yesterday. Linda in Ramsey says 20 miles per hour seems to be working. Is she qualified to know, and how many lives has it saved, and where is she? It's just anecdotal, it's speculation. Is that what the minister is relying on, says Andy. The 20 mile per hour limit seems to be, and if the tale is true about those poles going up in Onchan for a 20 mile per hour speed limit, I don't know whether, if you drive, have you been monitoring your speed lately? Just try something for me over the next few days and throttle back to 20 miles per hour and see how you feel. Now, of course, in daytime, it's a lot different when there's a lot more traffic around and more people around. But after, say, 10 o'clock at night, when there's much less traffic on the roads and far fewer pedestrians on the roads, how does that feel, driving at 20 miles per hour? Because it may be something you have to get used to if this particular 20 mile per hour regime comes into play. Camper vans on the TT weeks, that's excited lots of opinion. The mobile homes, as it were. Camper vans in TT week, great, says John. The more the merrier, but there needs to be designated places for them to park with toilets. Currently, they're parking in residential areas, including local people hiring theirs out, parked in front of people's houses. There are no toilet facilities, so this can cause an issue. And again, yesterday, a lot of correspondence about the amount of camper vans coming to the island. Many people just saying that's the way it is. And in Europe, small villages, small towns and big towns all have designated areas for camper vans, with electricity, with shower blocks, with toilets and what have you. Is it time for that to happen on the Isle of Man? Where would you put it? In regards, well, of course, I think there's one down south, isn't there? In regards to the caller asking about the TT Plus playback quality, firstly, you have to create an account. Therefore, a password is required to log in to view the live stream, says Ron. In regards to the playback issue, there are video player settings in the app, and you can reduce the playback quality to low, medium, or high. I suggest the listener first logs in, then sets the video playback to the lowest setting. All the best from Ron at the Eyrie. Thank you, Ronald. We appreciate that. And well done to, well, Peter and Danny sorted it out themselves yesterday. Regarding the FOI research and the answer to requests, £85,000 a year to sit to be silent. Some of them should earn their money, says Francis and Francesca. Which ones are you talking about, Francis? Which ones of the MHK should be talking more? I mean, talking doesn't necessarily mean saying something, remember that. I mentioned yesterday this thing about poverty, and there's a big report about poverty. Later this month, the Council of Ministers' annual report on poverty measures is going to be laid before Tynwald. And the whole story of poverty on the Isle of Man is something that is a vexed question, because poverty can be relative. Some people can exist on a lot less money than other people. Depends what you want from life, doesn't it? Depends where your barrier for poverty is. But the government's going to be the Council of Ministers' annual report on poverty measures will be laid before Tynwald, providing an overview on the latest indicators on poverty and highlighting a series of measures aimed at alleviating poverty and improving the lives of people across the Isle of Man. I just wonder what your view is on what constitutes poverty. Ability to pay bills? Having a big telly? Having a vehicle, having two vehicles, a certain amount of clothes per year, all the food you can eat. Where does poverty lie? I'd be interested to know, in your opinion, at what point would you consider yourself poor? Howard joins us first of all. Hi, Howard.
Hello, Andy. Just listened to you there and about the 20 mile an hour limit.
Yeah.
Be interesting to know who had actually got their name on the bottom of the order for this, apart from Michelle Haywood. Who in the DOI or the government has designated that the island should be not all completely covered in 20 mile an hour? That would be stupid. But who actually suggested this? Who put it forward? And who got it to the present state? Because it's been well planned. You don't sort something out and then go and ask questions after you've ordered, well, mind you, this lot do, ordered all the signs for the various areas, and they're talking about £500,000. Now, they talk about money like that, like it's a two-penny. And there's a man, he's talking about £500,000 again to save money, to set it up, to save money. But what I'd like to know is, what thought has gone into this 20 mile an hour? Because as some of your listeners have said, it's going to be detrimental to a lot of trades. Delivery vans, various buses, driving schools, driving tests. So, and a lot of the driving tests are taken around residential areas. So they will only be shown how to do a 20-mile-an-hour limit. So you're taught how to pass a test, but not how to drive. And that is vital, because where it comes outside the 20-mile-an-hour limit, these people are going to be virtually incapable of controlling a car.
Yeah, it's interesting, Howard. I got a message in from Wendy, and she said, because I mentioned earlier on that different times of the day, you know, the roads can be empty. So when you're driving at 20 miles per hour, say, in the daytime, when there are lots of people around, well, that's taken as read. But at night time, or 2 o'clock in the morning when there's nobody there, and you're creeping along at 20 miles per hour, it will be, at the very least, tempting to go above that.
It'll be very easy to go above it, because I was out yesterday. I drove up around where the pub is, the Horse and Plough. I was going up to pick some stuff up. And I thought, that's a 30-mile-an-hour zone there. There's nothing about it. I'll just drop it down to 20. But you're continually looking at your speedometer. In other words, while you're looking at that, you're talking about seconds, microseconds, where somebody could dive out in front of you or something happens in front of you. And this is going to be something that you're going to be watching continuously so you don't exceed. But having said that, the police have said it's virtually unenforceable. So people are not going to take a great deal of notice of it, because we just don't have the policing to police this new standard. But what I'd like to know is, as I said when I started, whose name is on the piece of paper that put this forward? In the DOI? In government? In the ministers? Somewhere in the system, somebody's proposed it and seconded it and passed it through the system within government. But one of the things to remember, and I've said this quite a few times, and I think it is the situation, there is no speed limit on bicycles. So you're tooting along the road at a 2-ton of metal at 20 mile an hour, and this idiot comes up behind you 30 and 40 mile an hour and knocks somebody down. You know, you couldn't write a script like it. The Welsh government have got rid of theirs virtually now, so there's going to be an awful lot of 20-mile-an-hour signs either getting scrapped or up for sale.
Yeah, I mean, Howard, I don't want to belittle road safety, and of course, you know, saving lives is paramount. The safety of everybody, pedestrians and drivers and motorbike riders and cyclists, is paramount. But there never seemed to be any sort of outcry for cutting it to 20 miles per hour, apart from around Ann Corlett in Douglas Central was talking about around Ballabruey and Ballacameen High School. It was basically around the high school in term time that Mrs. Corlett was bothered about. And it seems to have been extrapolated, just spread out to cover everywhere, as though it's a self-evident good idea. I don't remember, and you know, Man in Line's often a good indicator of this. We never had, you know, tons and tons of calls saying we must lower the speed limit. Nobody ever said it, Howard.
No, you're quite right there. And this is what I'm asking, who in government brought this forward? Apart from, like we got the, was it Ann Corlett? I agree, where we're up in Annika and Farm Hill and areas around there, there's 20 mile an hour, but it's clearly indicated when you go onto the area where the houses are.
Yeah.
And that is sensible, because it's ideal where children will be playing.
Yeah.
But again, as I say, the motorcycle and push bikes and what are becoming very popular, electric cycles and electric scooters. Now, they're considered by the government and by the DOI as not mechanically propelled, although they are, because they have an electric motor. So they should be restricted to 20 mile an hour, but they're not. And this is the farcical part about it. It's like having a racehorse pulling a cart, and you can't do it. So there's nobody come up with any names or otherwise. And this is where they bring something controversial like this. They should have a name that they can say, well, it was suggested and it was brought up by X person. Mm-hmm. And is that the little blob that's within the government, within... I keep saying the civil service, because that's where these ideas come from.
Well, presumably, Howard, the person who's behind this, or the people who are behind this, are proud of it. It's what they really want. So you would assume that if somebody is proud of this achievement, they'd want their name attached to it. They'd want to be known for the person or the people who brought in the 20-mile... Otherwise, if it's not a good idea, why are they doing it?
Well, you had a prime example with the power station down at Paul Rose. They were all slapping each other on the back, whining and dining on the credits of it, and then suddenly found out it was £170 million that had been misappropriated, in a sense, by loans, etc. And nobody was there then. Zoop, they were gone. We knew about it, but we couldn't do anything about it. And all the excuses imaginable were there, and this is what you're going to find, that the people who brought this forward, who probably watching the Welsh speed limits, etc., and they'd be thinking, well, nobody's going to find us because my name is not there. But they should be.
Yeah.
They are bringing this forward, and it's a for dictatorial. And it says, you will do this. But I don't see anywhere that was in the manifestos. There's nothing being brought up apart from saying it's going to happen.
Yeah.
So somebody in government somewhere has brought this forward, and it's been carried forward, and it will continue to be carried forward no matter which minister is in charge of DOI.
Okay, all right.
So I think it's time we had a serious look at it before we waste more money.
All right.
Going up through QEG and various other schools, you have these flashing lights, 20 mile an hour, and they are in specific periods of time.
Yeah, it says, doesn't it? During the inset in the morning, and when the children leave school in the afternoon, it's all there perfectly.
And that's sensible.
Yeah.
That's sensible. But to put a blanket 20 mile an hour in a large part of, well, the island, because that's what's planned, that is ridiculous.
Okay. All right, Howard.
Okay.
Thanks for calling today.
Thanks, Andy.
Cheers. So 28 minutes after 12 on Manx Radio. Owen Juen's on now. Hi, Juen.
If you want to see what 20 miles an hour looks like, get in this queue on the promenade going into Douglas. That'll give everyone an idea of what 20 miles an hour is going to look like all year round. In fact, I think someone was saying 20 mile an hour, please. What Howard said there is exactly what I think myself and Julian have been saying for a while. But let these people, the invisible people that are working in government, put their name to this stuff. But the problem that you've got here as well is we've got politicians who are agreeing with it. Now, either they're agreeing with it because, A, they haven't read it through properly and they're just signing it off, or they're agreeing to it. Either way, we've got a problem, because what Michelle Hayward is doing here, Dr. Michelle Hayward, I just referred to the woman who complained yesterday. Dr. Michelle Hayward is doing is not agreeing with the general public here, which voted her in. In fact, in quite a small number, actually, she got voted in by. So she should be listening to the people and saying to her, the advice she's getting from her civil servants, is this correct? And I'm not putting my signature to it until I fully understand it.
Well, I'm thinking of two other politicians. I'm thinking of Dr. Allinson and Mr. Hooper. Both have introduced private members' bills and have attached their names to them. Dr. Allinson with a sister dying, and he's happy to be known by it, and he will always talk about it. And Mr. Hooper taking away the vote of the bishop in Tynwald. And Mr. Hooper has been very public about his intentions and why it is and what have you, and he'll stand up for it. So, you know, like them or not, the fact is Dr. Allinson and Mr. Hooper will stand by their policies and by their private members' bills. I'm just wondering, who's the person behind this? Because it couldn't be Michelle Hayward, because it obviously must have been thought out before she got the job.
Exactly. And like you said, this has been procrastinated on. Anne Cole had put in, a sensible motion when she was there. But someone embedded in civil service, and again, I keep referring back to the higher agendas that these people are working to, which is they don't want private motor vehicles on the road after a certain amount of 2030. So you wonder where these agendas are actually coming from. And that's the thing. I mean, Howard said, you know, these people pass a motion that these people have to put their sign it off and put their name to it in public as a public representative and a public civil servant. I'm just looking at two Manx Radio bulletin this week. I thought it brought a little smile to my face. It was like the red arrows are on tonight. It's a free show. And I'm thinking, how are you going to charge for that then? I thought that was quite an interesting one. And the other one that brought a smile to my face was £535,000 worth of taxpayers' money is going to be spent on cost cutting. That's a good one as well, isn't it? Well, the humour that's coming out there. But going on to your poverty thing there, Andy, what do we define as poverty these days?
Well, the government have got an idea. I mean, this annual report on poverty measures will be coming out, and it could be that poverty means different things to different people. There are many people who were brought up in straitened circumstances, in tight circumstances, and depends, you know, what is poverty? Three meals a day? Is it only two meals a day? Is it not buying new clothes? Is it only going to charity shops? Is it not having a vehicle? I don't know. What do you think is poverty?
Well, I don't know. It doesn't inspire me that government are looking into it, for one. But I mean, that is the question here. And where does poverty come from? My reading between the lines here in the last few days, and looking at the narrative and how it's being presented, is a lot of the emphasis being put on here about people paying high rents and rogue landlords charging high rents and stuff. And there probably is some high rents here. But I'm looking at, where does poverty start from? Taxation, maybe? Is it the government that start this because of taxation? I mean, everything is taxed so much. Everyone is taxed so much. Even the poor landlords have got pat testing for every single person they put in their house when they have a changeover. So the whole thing comes from taxation and problematic points that government put in the way, surely. So they're viewing themselves, are they? They're going to self-organise themselves. I don't get it. I mean, it's a big question, isn't it, Andy? Where does poverty start?
Well, interesting. I got a note in from Craig. He just messaged in just to say, anybody who can afford a £3 cup of coffee isn't poor. So, you know, that's a bit of a litmus test. You know, the £3 cup of coffee, where did that come from? Coffee never used. And I think if you get some of these special things, they're a fiver a cup.
And the coffee culture was born on the principle of, you know, that you shouldn't have it, but it was changing your pocket and you could afford it just about. It was still jingling around in your pocket. Yeah. And that was the principle of the coffee culture. Because beforehand, you went and got a jar of Nescafe and put some milk and sugar in it and you were happy.
Yeah.
But it's been born out of that. And Craig's quite right in that. You know, if someone can go down and get a £3 cup of coffee every morning, you know, where do you define poverty? Is poverty now having a flat screen TV that's not smart?
Yeah.
Or is poverty not having a TV at all?
Well, the thing is, June, it's all about aspiration, isn't it? It's what you want. And nowadays, because the culture nowadays is for instant gratification, you know, if you can't get what you want nowadays, does that mean that you're poor? The concept of actually saving up for something seems to be redundant.
And of course, now we're coming to the cycle of the end of the fiat currency system, whether people see it or not. We've been living in a debt culture for so many years now. It's now accepted that you just go out and buy what you can't afford. This was always the American problem. And, you know, when things go bust in America, they go bust in a big way because no one's got any money. It's just a debt society. And Europe and England have followed it. If you look at the statistics, if England goes down, it's going to go into a deeper depression than what America will because of the amount of debt that we've got. but we're spiralling very close to the end of a capitalist culture with fiat currency. But it'll be interesting to see. I mean, on that note, Andy, I'm going to go down to the Age Concern shop and get myself a new jumper.
All right. Well, I hope so as well. And in this weather, you probably need it. Thanks, Ewan.
Take care, Andy.
Okay. So, Council of Ministers' annual report on poverty measures will be laid before Tynwald later this month. It's an overview of the latest indicators on poverty and highlights a series of measures aimed at alleviating the issue and improving the lives of people across the Isle of Man. Recent statistics show a percentage of Isle of Man residents are struggling to keep up with the cost of living, particularly those living in private rental properties. Here's the Treasury Minister, Dr. Allinson.
Back in 2019, Tynwald set up a committee on poverty to look at, one, how we calculate it, and then how we quantify and deal with it, and actually have the evidence to bring forward policies, government policies, and approval by Tynwald, obviously, to try to counter this. And again, it's really quite complicated, because what we're talking about now, you've got sort of absolute poverty, but also you've got relative poverty, which is defined as when a household receives about 60% of the median household income for the Isle of Man. And we haven't really had a good idea of that. We know every year we do an earnings survey, and we know that the median gross pay is around about £38,000 a year, but that's 2023. But actually, household income, that's not just what you earn, that's what you might get from benefits and what you might get from investments or money in the bank. And so every 5 years we do what's called the Household Income and Expenditure Survey, and that's used for calculating the VAT share, and therefore then extrapolated on how many people are below 60% of that. And it's come up with a figure of around about 11% of the household studied of that, which is lower than the UK, but still a significant amount. And then when you look at those people who are in the private rental market, it goes up even higher to the 25%. So what we need to do is look at government policies that are there and the ones that we have to develop to try to correct some of this and lift people out of relative poverty, to give them a better experience of being able to live on the Isle of Man and be able to afford the things that some of the rest of us take for granted.
Is it ever possible to wipe it out?
Because relative poverty moves according to the economic climate, there'll always be people who are slightly behind their neighbours. That's a fact of life. What we need to do, though, is ensure that everyone has a chance on this island to earn more, to participate in our society more, and to enjoy living on the island more. And that's what the whole island plan and the whole thrust of this administration has been trying to achieve.
Well, we'll see what happens. There has been mentioned many, many times of an underclass on the Isle of Man. And if you're listening off the Isle of Man, you may be having a slight giggle, because the perception for people living off the Isle of Man that everybody on the Isle of Man is a millionaire, very rich. It's not true. There are many people who are struggling. And quite what we do about it, it's everybody's problem. It is everybody's problem. We can't. The Isle of Man is such a small community, and most people know most people, or they know somebody who knows somebody. So if there is an underclass of people who are struggling, then it does affect us all. We have broadly a very cohesive society on the Isle of Man, and it's something, obviously, that the government wants to retain. And we'll see how they get on. But I'd really appreciate your thoughts on this. Poverty on the Isle of Man. David's with us now. Hi, David.
Hi, Randy. I just want to put something on record. When I was in the department of in them days, the DOI, under Phil Gorn and David Anderson, and how the system works. When you get into Parliament, somebody approaches you who becomes a minister. They get the ministers involved. Then Chief Minister becomes available. Then you get the ministers involved, and then the ministers then look around the politicians to get them involved in a department. And I think that's one of the biggest failures we've got in the minute now. We've got 8 of the politicians are not getting involved in departments now. But when you got into a department like I did in DOI, I was under Bruce Hanney, and what happened is you had pink papers. So once a month you had a department meeting where you met officers, Bruce Hanney and senior officers there, and you discussed issues. And I say it was the 20 miles an hour scheme. It wasn't in them days, right? But just for an example now, there'd be a pink paper with who proposed it, who wants this to go through, and the reasons why, and any negativity or any cost implications or trouble with the population if this came about. And it was then brought to a department. Then you would say, like I did at one time, I disagreed sometimes with Bruce Hanney and just said to him, no, I don't think this is what we should be doing. And then it would go back then through to the department meeting where all the politicians met with the minister. The minister had an agenda, went through it all and said, what's the problem, David, on this? And I'd say to him, well, I don't like this because it's not going to work or whatever. And it's ridiculous. So there will be a trail. And we can't seem to get the trail at the minute of where it started and where it went to. But ultimately, can I say to everybody too, the minister actually, whoever it is responsible. So she would have had to sign it off, you know, put that ink on the bottom. Hopefully the other members supported her, but maybe some of them didn't. And I just wondered, and I can't remember off the top of my head, who's in that department of DOI now and who's making any effective decisions apart from the minister? Or maybe the minister is the department in highways. Maybe yeah. She's took on the task because ministers could do that. It's a waste of their resources, really, when you've got people that should be working for you. But maybe with eight politicians just sitting on the side collecting their wage packets every month, it doesn't make much difference. And then keep away from the dodgy bit.
But I mean, you know, as you say, there will be a trail somewhere. But I'm just amazed that people, you know, if people are for this, that they're not coming out and talking about it. And just, I think their political members are, I think Laurie Hooper's an infrastructure member, Joni Farragher, and Dawn Kinnish, I think, from LegCo, are the political members.
Yeah, the only thing I'd say about our friend Hooper from Ramsey is he's the one that instigated the private members bill under the DOI to change the Local Government Act to demand or potentially instruct local authorities to do certain things, which is now stuck, I believe, at the MLCs there. Hopefully they're going to drag it in and question it and say, well, was this a good thing to do? That'd be a prime example for something that somebody's wanting to get something done no matter what. And the department has accepted that principle because when it was a private member's effort, it was included then in the bill going forward and is stuck in that bill for the local authority amendment bill. Yeah. So, and people, as far as I know, most of the local authorities and new members as well in local authorities are dead against it and were never consulted on it. It was another one. So the biggest thing we've got from the DOI is they don't consult. So why do we bother?
Well, I mean, not consulting really is that's not going to, you're not going to have a fruitful outcome in the end, because unless everybody buys into this, into something, then it's then it's just people, you know, going off on their own, really. Everybody needs to be in on it, even if they disagree. You know, the team needs to be behind something.
It does. And the other thing I was going to say, too, because it was drawn to my attention the other day there, these particular ones that were in a 30-mile-an-hour zone, which when you're going over, you see these indicators that come up. Remember the smiley faces and the grilly faces and stuff like that? Well, they'll all have to be changed or recalibrated or new guts put inside them to go to the 20, won't they? Otherwise, they'll be stuck. They'll be stuck all day having 300 or 400 vehicles, maybe doing legitimate 20 miles an hour, but the rest of them doing 30, 40, 50. And it's still, we still haven't got the signs up. I'm just waiting. I want to be the first now to get the 20-mile-an-hour zone, although the consultation hasn't finished.
Not until July. It's the Friday the 4th of July.
Maybe on Timmel Day. I can't remember. What is Timmel Day this year? Is that Saturday?
It's a Monday. I think it's Monday. Monday the 7th.
Well, we're off anyway. And Max Radio will be off, won't you? Because you'll be up there.
Oh, yeah, we'll be there. Yeah. And we'll be out with a microphone as well, talking to people.
The main question you're going to ask is to people, or they're going to be asking you is, what about the 20-mile-an-hour zone?
Yeah.
What happened? Okay. Who did it? Was it you?
All right.
Oh, maybe in the chapel, I'm not suggesting this, we put in one of the seats then, this is the person that done the 20 mile an hour. Don't blame me.
All right. Thanks, David.
See ya.
Cheers now. It's a quarter to one now. Andrew's with us now. Hi, Andrew.
Hi there. Good day to you. Apologies, I think I've got a croaky voice today. Just quickly, though, on David there and the DOI.
No.
Yes, it's autocratic, isn't it? This is from the Donald Trump playbook. Let's just do something and we'll worry about it later. Anyway, I didn't come on for that. Howard mentioned it earlier, and I haven't seen it on your site yet as a story. It's on a different site. But this written answer to Mr. Hooper from Minister Without Portfolio, Mr. Tim Krukol, whereby Mr. Hooper had asked if Mr. Krukol would provide a list of business cases which had been approved in connection with the efficiency program, showing in each case how much any approved action will cost and what the timescales and amount are of the anticipated savings. That was the question the 20th of May and the answer published on the 3rd of June. And Mr. Krukol says, since the efficiencies program was initiated this year, three business cases have been approved to a total value of 2.3 million, of which 42,000 has been spent to date. These business cases represent short-term investments designed to unlock meaningful long-term benefits focused on the following areas. One, and get ready for the word salad and verbal diarrhea here. Program set up, initiation and governance to a value of £535,086 over 14 months. This funding represents an upfront investment to bring the programme into full operation, covering initial resourcing required to establish and support the front-loaded work associated with a programme and building the foundations to enable effective long-term delivery.
What does that mean?
Well, I've just said it's verbal diarrhoea. It's just verbal diarrhoea and word salad. What exactly does it mean? Because, look, there's Mr. Krukol. He's already being paid a salary. And it says here, covering initial resourcing. Well, that's personnel.
Yeah.
So he's got to have some civil servants. They're already being paid. So what is this £535,000 being spent on? It's just... Look, we can save money straight away. Alf, Mr. Cannon, Chief Minister, remove Mr. Krukol. You've got a saving there straight away. It's just spending money on what? It's just an empire that he's building. And they said they can't find money for the children's library. It's a shame. It's a shame on the whole Comin. And particularly as well, Mr. Allinson, you're approving the spending of this money. They just need to... This government, honestly, is just losing the respect of the voting population. Going off, spending money on... Well, they can't even explain what it is. It's just verbal diarrhoea, that.
Okay. All right, Andrew. We appreciate that.
Jolly good.
Thanks
Cheers
for
now.
Raising it. All right.
Bye.
Take care
Bye.
Now. 11 minutes to one.
World-class racing returns to the Isle of Man. And while the TT racers take to the tracks, Tesco has everything you need to fuel your own adventure, wherever you're watching. From meal deals to barbecue essentials, we'll sort your pit stops this season. Setting up camp, get race day ready with great value camping gear. With 10 stores open 7 days a week, Tesco are here to keep you on track. Tesco, every little helps.
Go al fresco in style with the Lifestyle Furniture Garden and Outdoor Collection. Discover our hand-picked range of gorgeous corner, dining, lounge and bistro sets, plus outdoor bars and fire pits, all with free delivery island-wide. For truly great outdoors, browse online at lifestylefurnitureplus.com. or explore the Garden and Outdoor Marquee at our main showroom, Snuggford Trading Estate, Union Mills. Lifestyle Furniture. It's everything your garden's been waiting for.
Housing, benefits or employment issues. Faulty goods, bad workmanship. Financial problems and relationship breakdowns. We all run into difficulties in life, and it can feel like there's no one who can help you sort them out. But at Manx Citizens Advice Service, we can help. As an independent charity, we offer free, confidential support covering all sorts of areas. You don't need an appointment. Just call in at Promenade Church, Lock Promenade Douglas, or call 366-338. Open Tuesdays from 12:30 till 3 and Fridays 10 till 12:30. Manx Citizens Advice Service. Your advice service.
Hi, Liz. I see you've had your garage converted. We're desperate for more room.
Yes. Come through and have a look. John called Manx Property Conversions. We now have an extra bedroom, but it could be another reception room, kids' playroom or office. They also did our conservatory roof last year. We were so impressed, we got them back to convert the garage.
Wow, I need that. What's their number again?
Call MPC on 450500. That's 450500. Or find them on Facebook at Manx Property Conversions.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
And Julian's with us now. Hi, Julian. Thanks for hanging on.
That's all right, Andy. No problem. There's a phrase that's used. It's called authoritarian in process. The definition of authoritarian in process is lack of transparency in planning and budgeting, no meaningful public engagement despite widespread impact, policy first, consultation later mindset, preemptive spending before public or parliamentary debate. This resembles policy by decree, where decisions effectively are made behind closed doors, then presented as a fait accompli. Does that sound familiar?
I think I know what you're referring to.
Yeah, authoritarian in process, I think, is the actual definition of what we've got here. By the way, totally agree with Dewan and Howard, David, Andrew. Interesting that the United Nations are now pushing quite hard to have 20-mile-per-hour zones. But unlike Anne Corlett, saying that she wanted it round schools and, you know, housing estates, United Nations are calling it for wherever pedestrians, cyclists or vulnerable road users mix with motor vehicles. So if we're pushing for active travel on the island, is there anywhere that's where you don't mix with cyclists or even pedestrians?
Well, you just wonder what's behind this. And Hannah dropped me a note in, a very darkly worded note, saying, this is all about control. This is all about control. I kind of know what she means, but really, you know, we all have to live our lives. And surely going at 30 miles an hour, it's not a heinous crime, is it?
Well, no. But, you know, a lot of people are asking, who is pushing this? Now, there is somebody who is a senior civil servant within the highway services who's had 38 years experience and is an advisor to the United Nations Office for Project Services. And that is Moore Blessing Kaduru. So it might be interesting to get her professional take on this. So she's had 38 years experience in international infrastructure projects of roads and bridges and is still an advisor to the United Nations Office for Project Services. She sounds like she's pretty qualified, and she is interim director of highway services on the island. It'd be kind of quite enlightening to actually have her take on what her opinion is on the 20-mile-an-hour rollout.
I got a message in from Gordon who just said, can you imagine, what are our TT fans going to make of this if we've got a 20-mile-per-hour zone here, there and everywhere, yet labelling ourselves as the most exciting road racing place in the world?
I know. Well, I suppose from a TT point of view, 200 isn't plenty enough. We need more, but anyway. Just last thing quick, Ørsted, Recharge News article this morning. Ørsted warns Miliband ahead of ruling that could doom its Irish Sea wind farms. Ørsted says its Irish Sea offshore wind assets could be shuttered a decade earlier than otherwise if Miliband rules against it in its wind theft dispute with EnBW and BP, who are doing the Morecambe and Morgan one. And this is to do with the wake turbulence causing over 5% losses in wind farms that are downwind of them.
Right.
And also, it seems to be further affecting Ørsted with an 83% drop in their share price since 2020.
All right, I've got to go because Vivian's waiting. Okay, thanks, Julian.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, good to hear from you. Vivian, hello, Vivian.
Hello, Andy. I wanted to talk about poverty.
Yeah.
I was born at the end of the war, the Second War, and nobody had anything. We had to get on with life as it was. And it was a wonderful life because everybody cared for one another. Nobody had more than the other. And we ate what was put in front of us and all the rest of it. Fortunately, my mother could cook, so we never starved. But it just makes you, when I look at what goes on today,
yeah.
I would love a lot of the young people today to go back to that era and they'd have a fit.
I mean, times have changed. Times have changed enormously.
Oh, I know they've changed.
Haven't they, Vivian?
But at least we knew what money was all about.
And
we didn't have it.
Which is a very important point. The young children today, you can't blame them because they've never known it. They've only ever known the world that they live in. But, I mean, would you say there's poverty around today?
I would say there's a lot of people that haven't got a lot of money. But I don't think there's many that have got nothing. Does that make sense to you?
I understand you. All right, Vivian. Thanks for hanging on and thanks for being with us today.
Okay. Bye for now.
I'd be really interested in this because poverty is relative, isn't it? Having no money. But also not having the trappings of society today. I think that's what Dr. Allinson was talking about, participating in society. Well, it's not going to go away, but I'd love your thoughts on it. If you want to email me at maninline@manxradio.com or leave a message on the answer phone on 682-631. That's it. Thanks to Chris on the phones today. And if you're involved in the racing, stay safe and enjoy it. And enjoy the rest of your Wednesday. Back tomorrow with another Open Line. WINT